And welcome to the weekend, and welcome to Saturday mornings on WHP 580. I'm Michael Parks, and thank you very much for starting off your weekend with us here on WHP 580. We are taking care of business, taking care of our local businesses and organizations, spotlighting and showcasing them, learning all about them and their products and services, and also talking about business, doing business in our community, and most importantly, supporting the many, many, many local businesses that make up the place that we call home here in central Pennsylvania. We've been teaming up a number of years, meeting with the folks from the Cumberland Area Economic Development Corporation, and it was so nice to bring them back on, because they had an event recently, just a couple weeks ago, which talked about economy, most more specifically labor. We've all been out and about. We've all seen the signs, still see the signs about I'm hiring, we are hiring, we're short, labor shortages and that sort of thing. So we're going to be talking about that. And if you are a business owner or thinking about starting a business, if you're a consumer, this will all be very, very good information for you to pick up in with us today. Joining us is Janet Anderson. Janet is the Director of Economic Development with CADIC. And also Ron Hetrick is joining us. Ron is the Senior VP and Staffing Strategy and Senior Economist with Lightcast, and he's going to be talking about the event that he attended and the information that his company put together to talk about, this drought that's going on in the labor industry. So first of all, Jana, we want to talk with you first. For folks who aren't familiar with you, tell us a little bit more about the Cumberland Valley Economic Development Corporation.
Your typical traditional economic development corporation. We work with our local businesses in Cumberland County to help them grow and expand their employment opportunities here within the area. We do everything from lending to site selection, identification of land and building that might be available, as well as now we're working with individuals on their workforce needs here in the area. And this has been the biggest issue that companies tell us they are having the most significant trouble with, is identification of employees.
Yeah, and it's the news continues to talk about the many, many corporations, many, many businesses that are opening up in the Cumberland region. This is just it's an incredible amount of companies that do business here in this region, and it is a hotbed for not only this part of the state, but the entire state and the entire Northeast. So we're lucky to have this region here. It's just a great place to do business, and the folks at CADIC, teaming up with people to help do business and help do business better. So we refer to this as the demographic drought. So, Janet, what happened? You reached out and said, we don't have the answers, but we think we can get them. Or how did this event all come about and this research?
So as the fastest growing county in the state of Pennsylvania for several years, we've been listening and talking to our local businesses to make sure that they stay and we continue to grow and remain the fastest growing county. Through those conversations, we heard the need and decided that we should put together an event to talk about the trouble that individual companies were having in finding employees. I was aware of Lightcast, formerly MC or Burning Glass, and have been a big fan of the reports that they put out. They're a world-renowned labor market and economic development data analytics company. And through the research, I became aware of a few reports, the demographic drought, bridging the gap, and more recently, their seventh annual talent attraction scorecard. So we thought that bringing them to Cumberland County would be a good way to address the needs of our local businesses. So I reached out to the company and asked if they would be willing to come in. And we worked with our local workforce development board, SCPA Works, to bring the event last Wednesday to the local community.
100 business attendees showed up for that. And at the event, you know, there you heard from a new Mechanicsburg business, you know, Gig and Take, and also some other folks there. So give us a feeling of what it was like, you know, for that event. Was it frustration, concern? What was the feeling in the room?
So we had 100 people, as you mentioned, in the room, and I think they were there to learn as much as possible about how they could change the way that they are looking at workforce and open to new ideas and suggestions. We did hear some frustration, but by the end of the event, and we were there for a couple of hours, I think they all walked out feeling better about the fact that they are not alone, as well as a better understanding of what they could do themselves to improve their opportunities for attracting new employees.
And we want to bring in Ron Hetrick now, who is with Lightcast, who attended that, and he and his company put together a report which is entitled Demographic Drought, How the Approaching Sandsdemic Will Transform the Labor Market for the Rest of Our Lives. It's pretty scary there, Ron. Tell us what Lightcast does and how you put this report together.
Sure. So Lightcast is a labor market analytics company. So that, what does that include? What includes, you know, gathering government data, so like Bureau of Labor Statistics data about, you know, labor economics. Also job postings aggregator. So we're scraping job boards so that we can see what are the trends, you know, who's hiring, what kind of skill sets are popular, how is the market evolving, all of those things. And then we also scrape, you know, profiles. So more of that supply side. What do people say they have in a market? And basically you're trying to combine all of these things together to say, to create kind of a supply and demand, you know, view. You know, is there going, how are things trending? How many people are trying to find the same thing? And then how many people are capable of actually doing those particular roles? And universities use that data to see how, are we putting the right graduates into the market for what this market needs right now? Communities use the data to plan their business planning. You know, like, what's it going to take? If we want to go from here to here over the next 5 to 10 years, you know, will our labor economy be able to meet those needs? And then obviously a lot of private businesses use that data when they're planning their hiring as well.
The data that you put together and the reports that you gave, you know, specifically for CADIC in this event, have you found that a lot of these reports are region specific or industry specific, or does it pretty, like, this demographic drought, is this something that blankets everything that we do when it comes to business?
Well, first off, I just want to say that there was two colleagues of mine that spoke at Cumberland County. So I'm the lead author of Demographic Drought. I wrote both the main article and the follow-up article, and then Courtney and Minley have helped. There's a lot of people who want to hear this message, so I'm going to kind of answer your question in this particular way. Literally everywhere. It is an incredible thing to watch. The universal feeling that everybody has, and I'm talking, you know, manufacturing industries to healthcare, which is in tremendous need right now. Every community in the country, you know, for your small rural markets, we've seen a lot of people moving away. Mid-sized markets, large cities, you know, everybody's wondering at the same time, you know, what happened? Where did everybody go? So it is such a universal thing. One thing that I will say is different is your experiences. Your mileage does vary. You know, looking at your county, if you look at Cumberland County, your labor force has been growing. I mean, there's a lot of the country that hasn't recovered the labor force that they had prior to the pandemic. So, you know, your county has seen that. But yet, even with that recovery, you currently, as of last month, you recorded the lowest at 2.5%, which is a crisis level unemployment rate. So this is just how crazy it is that the ones, you know, I live in Florida, there's a lot of people moving here, but all you see are help wanted signs. You know, the demand we have for people is insatiable, and we just simply don't have the labor force to meet that demand.
What brought this on? Did COVID kick it into gear? You mentioned that a lot of times it does make sense. We've all known this, that the boomer workforce has entered the retirement. You're listening and looking at one right here, because I retired somewhat back in May. But did COVID kick this into gear or into problems and shortage? Did the government with the payouts? Is there any cause?
It's so complicated, but yet it's not. It is the easiest one of this is that, one of the things we present and that was presented there is that this was happening. Okay, this has been going on for decades. We saw this very large boomer population moving through the labor force, and it got large because you had women entering in, in earnest in the early 1970s, and there was a lot of competition for jobs. So you really had to work long, and you had to work hard, and boomers made a lot of money, and now they're all at their peak retirement years. So we are seeing these things. They were already occurring. Even going back to 2009 was the very first time we started noticing this, but we're in those peak years now. So if you had these things already in play, then you put this kind of outlier event that comes in that it just made a lot of people, and this is something that we talk about, there's a misconception out there that a lot of people retired early. And the reality is it's not so much that people retired earlier. It's just all these people that were just holding on. They were in their 60s, late 60s, maybe even early 70s. And they're like, well, I'm just going to work another year or two. They all decided at the same time that we're done and we're all going to leave. So it basically, what we always say, it puts the accelerator pedal down. These things were going to happen over the next 5 to 10 years. Unfortunately, we kind of took 4 or 5 years of that and made it happen in 1 year. So it kind of has left us all reeling. When you do something slow, when you get into trouble slowly, you can react better. When you do it quickly, it's much harder to react.
Ron Hetrick is the Vice President of Staffing Strategy and Senior Labor Economist with Lightcast. And they had this event last week to talk about the labor shortage. One of the notes that you pointed out to me was saying that we don't have the level of participation we need from millennials and Generation Z to overcome this shortfall currently. What does that mean? I mean, they don't want to work, or what is that?
It is really an incredible thing to kind of study. So when we were studying labor force participation rate, so it's the percentage of the population that's either working or looking to work. So we're watching that go up over time. And then what happens is once millennials became the predominant part of the labor force, that participation rate started to decline. And it's been declining for about 15, 20 years pretty consistently. And what's happening is mostly being driven by men. There's been a tremendous amount of men who have left the labor force. Now, some people say, well, that must be because, as women entered in, the men started dropping out. But the data doesn't seem to support that per se, because what we're really noticing more and what we talk about extensively in the first Demographic Drought article is that so many men just simply aren't getting married. They're not leaving the house. So in the last census, we had more men 25 to 34 years old living with their parents than with a spouse for the first time in history since the Civil War. So what happens is this kind of delayed life event. So getting a job, getting married, having children, buying a house, that's all being delayed for younger men who are just simply not in the labor force. Part of that also is because of the opioid problem and now the fentanyl problem. Is just so pervasive. So, a lot of times we talk about things in terms of, overdose deaths, but you have to understand there are hundreds of thousands of men who are out of the labor force that are battling addiction of some kind. So, this is having a profound effect, and it's been having a profound effect over time. But most certainly that is the primary issue. This article called Bridging the Gap that I was the lead author on that came out earlier this year, that article talks about the fact that there are people, we have 100 million people in the U.S. right now who are not in the labor force, okay? So it doesn't, they're there, they're just not, they're not willing to work at this time. And that number is about 5 million higher than where it was prior to COVID. So we've had a ton of people who just dropped out of the labor force. And now, yes, the majority of those people are over the age of 55. But the reality is there's just this kind of reluctance to kind of come back in. Yes, the payments did have an effect. Yes, there's a lot of things that did have an effect. But it may just be a situation where when you know, a lot of couples maybe during the pandemic figured out how to live off of one salary.
Well,
maybe they moved to an area that was more affordable. Now they don't both need to work. It could be any of a number of things, but the reality is there's definitely this gap that exists. And the way to fix the problem is not going to, it's not going to come from unemployment. Like I just said, you know, the area that you're in has its lowest unemployment rate ever. It's really about getting people who are on the sidelines and saying, how can we make work for you?
That makes sense. It's so many, you know, the discussion came up everywhere. You know, I go, you know, I spent a lot of time this past week with a lot of relatives and people, you know, even some people came in from overseas to visit, and we sit around and we sit there and talk and goes, what's the deal? What are these people doing that they don't, you know, work? Why can't we do this shortage? And like you were saying was it's not an easy answer, but from talking to you, I think there is an answer. We're going to take a break and find out what that answer is for the people who are running businesses, doing business, and how to get that labor force, like you said, off of the sideline and find out more. Ron Hetrick is joining us, Vice President of Staffing Strategy and Senior Labor Economist with Lightcast, and also Janet Anderson, who is the Director of Economic Development for the Cumberland Valley Economic Development Corporation, CADIC. You can learn more about CADIC at cumberlandbusiness.com. You can learn more about Lightcast at lightcast.io. You can hear our podcast again, WHP580.com. Find the podcast page, Michael Parks, and hear it anytime on the iHeartRadio app. We'll continue in a bit. We are taking care of business on WHP. We are back taking care of business Saturday mornings, WHP 580, Michael Parks, along with Ron Hetrick, Vice President of Staffing Strategy and Senior Labor Economist with Lightcast, and also Janet Anderson, Director of Economic Development for the Cumberland Area Economic Development Corporation. We know them as CADIC. And today we're talking about the demographic drought, how the approaching sans-demic will transform the labor market for the rest of our lives, why there's a labor shortage, how do we solve it. Ron and his company, Lightcast, appeared here in the region to address the problem with 100 area Cumberland County businesses and Cumberland region businesses, and found out that we need about 3.5 million more workers to get the country back to the level of employment that would service our production in a similar way that it was prior to the pandemic shutdowns. Some scary stuff, but the most important thing is that your company, Ron, and also the folks at CADIC say, yeah, we got a problem. Let's find a way to solve it. So what's the solution?
Yeah, I want to say one thing, that the key word here is creativity. And if you're thinking, you know what, I'm going to kind of tune this guy out, you know, after, no, you really need to understand what I'm saying. You need to start thinking and doing things that you've never thought you were ever going to do. And that means thinking of alternative workforces, whether that be former offenders, whether it be people who have, you know, a history of kind of being in and out of the labor force. Maybe they're taking care of elderly parents or of children, figuring out ways to engage people who otherwise typically get left to the sidelines. So I think creativity is going to be key to unlocking things. What also does creativity mean? It means that if you're willing to be flexible about schedules and everything, that you can't just put those things in your job postings, right? Because only people who are looking for jobs see your job postings. So if you're trying to get somebody off the sideline who's at home going, I just don't think work is an option for me right now, you've got to figure out ways of getting this message to them. Like, look, we have ways of making this work. So, you know, that just requires you to get to know the people in your own organization, asking them, hey, who do you know? Do you have friends who are not currently in, you know, working right now? Could I talk to them? Could I just see what it would take for them to kind of cross this divide and see work as an option for them again? So, you know, there's those aspects. I know a lot of people who are listening are going to be like, well, robots, you know, robots are going to fix the problem, or AI. And I always tell people, and as we say in the presentation, I'm not discouraging that. It's just you have to understand that robotics and AI typically come alongside of people in jobs more than straight out replace them, which was kind of the great mistelling that we were saying, you know, throughout the 2010s about the rise of the robot army. It was never really going to be enough. There were never going to be enough robots to replace the people that we need. And the projections that we have are just, we just have such a need for humanity. So I think that these are all really important, but I think as employers, just a couple other things that I would say definitely do. Number one, look at your job descriptions. start to really think about, what is it that I have this person doing? What was the original reason this job was created? And yes, I have an ideal vision of who I want. But at the end of the day, I could get somebody in here, maybe for cheaper, maybe who's really driven and doesn't have maybe all of the things that I'm asking for. Start to get rid of these things. Start to look at your background check. So if you have a 10-year background check, you know, drop it down to 3, drop it down to 7. Companies are doing this all over the place, and they're getting rid of things that have nothing to do with the job, like did this person pass a bad check or something, and yet what they're doing for you has nothing to do with those particular things. Companies are doing that. Look at your drug screenings. There are a number of companies now who are dropping THC across the country because it opens up a much broader pool to them. So experiment with these things. Try different things out, but do it with intention. Do it and measure the results. Don't just do it kind of accidentally, and then something doesn't work out, and you go, you know what, that didn't work for me. I'm done with that. I'm not going to do that anymore. That's not the way you succeed. The way you succeed is we have a plan for how we're going to employ ex-offenders, and we're going to work with the advocates from the prison system to identify good candidates, and then we're going to have them go through some training, and then we're going to employ them in a very deliberate way. And if something doesn't work out, we're going to course correct, and we're going to make this a thing that we do. Companies are having success doing those types of things.
What's the importance of, once you hire these people, I met with some business consultants, and they were talking that this new generation, we have to treat them differently on the workforce, basically saying, lay out a plan for them, saying, this is how you get from here to there, reach their goals, make it clear and concise and easy for them. I know I sat down with some recent college graduates who have great jobs now in great companies, but they're just not satisfied, but they want to know how to move on to the next step. I have two sons. One works for Deloitte, one works for Regeneron. And the same thing is like with Regeneron, the company, the drug company up in Albany, they lay out those plans on how you can advance, you know, in the business. Yep. Is that important to this new generation? Once you hire people, make it easy or make it clear as to how they can advance?
Yeah, I want to make a point on this. This is a really important point, and that is there's nothing at all that's unique about the generation that is coming up now versus any other generation, except for one thing, and that is leverage. So, you know, these things always mattered. People always wanted to know what their career paths were. You know, no one ever wanted to be stuck. However, when you have leverage, then these things really start to matter because now I can compare you to other options and I can say, look, this is a really, wait, you're basically saying I have to wait for someone to die before I can get promoted? Like, those are the kind of things that people don't have to wait for anymore. So this concept of, hey, just do your time and eventually you'll get to where you want to be, people don't have to do that anymore. You can job hop enough that they can get those kind of promotions just artificially just by going through those types of things. So I think what this is doing is forcing companies to do what they always should have done, which is to say, look, you know, this is how success is measured here. And if you want to go to the next level, then this is kind of what you're going to need to do. And if you're killing it, we're going to create an opportunity for you here. And I think this is something that I really want to stress as well. And I tell this to all of the large companies that I meet with, you know, the economy doesn't care about your bureaucracy. Like, they really don't care. They don't care about all of the, well, we only have so many people in this position and they have to go through these 5, you know, different levels before they hit this position. The economy doesn't care about that. So if you want to retain your best young people, find them, identify them, challenge them, and then create opportunities. And if that makes other people in your company, well, angry, well, I'm angry that this person, you know, went by me at this. Look, everybody has the options of exercising those rights. But I think as an employer, you've got the responsibility of putting the best people in your company in the best position to drive the best results. So I think that it's only fair that we do lay these things out.
Janet, I wanted to talk to you briefly. We want to talk about what you refer to as the gig economy. What is that? And is that something that Kadic is involved in? I know I mentioned one of your participants was involved in that business. So tell us more about the gig economy.
So a lot of young people, back to Ron's point about creativity and flexibility and the ways to actually keep young people engaged and feeling a part of what's happening includes the gig economy. Some people don't want to work a 40-hour work week. Perhaps they can't. They have children at home. Looking at that gig work has really helped keep employers at full speed. And we're fortunate here in our county to have a brand new company called Gig and Take that spoke at our conference last week about how he's helping local manufacturers to reach the gig worker.
I was just going to add in here, you know, gig is basically, it stands for any non-traditional type of arrangement. So sometimes you can be called a gig worker even if you're just a part-time worker. Your gig, if you take assignments for pay, so let's say somebody asks you to design a website for them and you just do that as a one-off thing. These are all ways of engaging people. I mean, we have all kinds of those people in my company. I'll relate a personal story, which is so big. I just think it's important for people to understand how this works. Many years ago, there was a woman who had worked for me. She had left the company, ended up having children. And at the time, I was just experiencing a tremendous amount of demand. So I reached out to her and I'm like, I really need you back. And she's like, well, I've got these children. And I said, OK, can you give me 2 days, just work from home 2 days, you tell me what hours you can engage. In fact, you just work when you want to work. I just need so much help, and I know you're the person who can do it. Over time, as her children got older, she transitioned more and more and more, and then she ended up taking over that team. She was the manager of the team that I had hired her on, and I think it's just this ability to kind of say, I need to meet you where you're at, and then I'll kind of grow or come alongside of you as you go through it, and it just enables people who, you know, so many people see work as a binary decision. They're either all in or they're all out. And I think what gig work does, if the employers do it really well, is they show people a path to work that is not what these people thought was possible.
As we wrap up, the report itself was, 40 some pages, and you had a long event, Janet, at recently about doing this. In about a minute, Ron, if you could just explain what's going on in our economy and what we need to do, and maybe put a spotlight or a bright ending to this.
We are at a transition time in the U.S. where you have this large boomer population in earnest retiring. There are going to be more older people than children in our country by 2034 for the first time in U.S. history. This means we have to start to think of things totally differently. It's time now, if you're an organization, you start looking at the way you're using workers now, and you start to change those things. What are the things you want to be great at? Get that down. Think about a fast food restaurant who says, look, we're only going to be a drive-thru. We're not going to have a restaurant experience because we're fast food. These types of things are what a lot of organizations are going to have to do. It's going to make you better. It's going to make you less reliant on labor. All of those kind of things can be solved, but you're going to have to address it with intent starting now.
Hmm. Well, again, there's some great information. The folks at Kadic, if you are a business and you need some assistance, need some advice, need some help, please reach out to them. It's the Cumberland Area Economic Development Corporation. Janet Anderson, Director of Economic Development, is joining us today. Their website is cumberlandbusiness.com. Also, Rod Hetrick, Vice President of Staffing, Strategy, and Senior Labor Economist with Lightcast. You can learn more about them at lightcast.io. So, Janet, Ron, thank you so much for some wonderful information today, and thank you for sharing it with our listeners.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. You can hear this podcast again. And again, we went a little long, so we have some extra information that you can pick up on our podcast. Find it at WHP580.com. Find the podcast page of Michael Parks. Search for it. Listen to it anytime on the iHeartRadio app. We will continue in a bit. We are taking care of business on WHP.